This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In hour number three of Dukes and Bell, Carl's got the time off. He's in Vegas, baby. Nothing like betting on the tournament. Chris is in for Carl today, and we appreciate you guys hanging with us. This hour of the show brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Join us right now on the WadeFord.com hotline. I always say this every time we speak to Clark. It's almost like you've taken the valedictorian from your high school class and thrown him into a sports debate with the kids from detention when they put CBS and TBS together. Clark Kellogg joins us, the lead college basketball analyst for CBS. When you would, you know, you'll come up with a great point, and then Charles goes, "Yeah, but they're terrible." You know, I mean, it's just Clark joins us right now. And by the way, Clemson fans, we'll get to Clark's picks here in a minute. You're going to love this. First thing, Clark, you giving Georgia a puncher's chance against Gonzaga?
I am. Clearly, they've got a better than puncher's chance. I mean, they've had some big time wins. That team has grown under Mike White. They've got really outstanding talent. They're a little young, but they're talented, and they've played obviously in the toughest conference in the country. Historically, the toughest conference in the country when you look at the way the SEC performed in the pre-conference schedule and throughout the regular season, and now representation of 14 teams in the tournament. So yeah, clearly they've got a puncher's chance. I kind of like Gonzaga in this underdog role. I mean, they've not often been in this spot where they've been in an 8-9 game over the last decade plus. I think they've made 9 straight Sweet 16s, and this team has some grit. It's got one of the best point guards in the country. I'm looking forward to the matchup. I mean, 8-9s are typically intriguing matchups, but this one, particularly because of how Georgia has performed and how Gonzaga has been a little more under the radar this season, makes this one a compelling 8-9 game.
Did Auburn's weeble wobble a little bit down the stretch change your opinion of them at all as a number one seed?
No, it didn't. I mean, clearly they earned the right to be the overall number one seed, had a phenomenal season. I mean, you hit pockets of turbulence during any long season. The really good teams do. Every team does. It's a matter of how you respond through that and out of it. And you always can restart when you're starting a conference tournament, you're starting the NCAA tournament. The most important thing is how are you going to perform currently. So I'm not really that dismayed by the stumble. I mean, they lost to really good teams in tough environments, so they still are a team that very well could be in San Antonio. I do think that Florida and Duke are the most complete of the one seeds, and I think Florida, with its versatile big guys who play both ends of the floor with the guard threesome they have, and actually Aberdeen coming off the bench gives them a quartet of really good size and skill, two-way skill in the backcourt. I think Florida may be the most potent and complete team if I were ranking them right now. Duke would be next. Then I would go probably Auburn, then Houston if I was ranking the four number one seeds.
Clark Kellogg with us. And in that Western region, do you see St. John's getting to that Elite Eight? Because I've been following Rick Pitino on the TV show this week, this year on Vice. They uh-huh. seem to be really physical, but they also struggle with their jump shooting. So do you see St. John's getting there?
No, that's accurate. I mean, if you've observed them at all, you love the resilience, you love the tenacity, you love the physicality, what they're able to do defensively, and how they've been able to come back and win games when they really haven't shot it well. They've only had maybe a handful of games, maybe a few more, where you could see them actually be efficient and proficient on offense, but defensively is where they turn your water off and make those comebacks, and that's a great attribute to have as a team. And I think they are a better shooting team than they've shown. And, you know, it's about what are you doing now, not what you've done in the past. So we'll see. But that is an Achilles heel. But they've been able to overcome it. And I think they're going to shoot it better in the tournament. I'd be surprised if they don't shoot it a little better in the tournament. And I do see them matching up with Florida in that Elite Eight in that region.
Clark, you mentioned Houston a moment ago. I want to follow up on that. We all know about the defense. But as you get deeper into the tournament, you need to score too. Can they keep
that's
up
right.
offensively?
Well, that's a question mark for them in Tennessee. That's always that's tended to be where things fall down for those teams. Remarkable work during the regular season. And you're right. As you move forward in the bracket, especially as it plays out according to form, you're going to have to play teams that are high level at both ends of the floor. And you've got to be able to score. You can't survive in a six-game run to a championship without having at least a couple of games where you're good offensively. You might be able to get by with one or two, but I just can't envision, particularly with the landscape as it is now, being able to win a championship solely on your defensive prowess.
You recognize the pipes. It's Clark Kellogg with us, guys, on Duke's Bell, getting ready for the tournament. And I love the fact you made a bold prediction. You love Clemson, and you've got them taking on Florida. Why do you like the Tigers?
I just love the way Brad Brownell has built that team. And, you know, you've got a few of those guys that were on the doorstep of the Final Four last year. I think that experience is valuable when you return players who have tasted that. They've had a really good season this year. The ACC hasn't been as strong as a conference, but they played out of conference some tough opponents and fared well. Their style of play is suited to tournament action, I think. They're physical. They're efficient on offense. They play a pretty smart, disciplined brand of basketball, and they've got guys that can go get it when you need it. I mean, Hunter Chase is really good. I think Shefflin has really improved. I just like their makeup. I like their mental, psychological, physical makeup. And in the tournament, that can serve you well when you add the experience. And I think Brad Brownell is really one of the more underrated, outstanding coaches in the game as well.
Kentucky finds themselves in a usual position as a high seed, but 22-11 under Coach Pope. Do you believe in what he's done early on in his tenure? Can they make some noise, or is this more?
I do believe, but they've been, you know, I do believe and have been really impressed with Mark's first year at Kentucky. I think it's a good fit. He obviously knows the place, being an alum. He's developed as a coach at different places before stepping into that very unique coaching seat in Kentucky. Injuries have been a bit of an issue for them. I mean, Lamont Butler has been great when he's been healthy, still working through that shoulder injury. Jackson Robinson, who's an outstanding player. I think he's a NBA prospect in terms of his future. And, you know, he's been shut down. So that really hurts. Otega Owe has been outstanding on the wing. Kobe Bray is a phenomenal laser shooter. But they have some flaws that make them vulnerable, and part of it is due to their personnel not being fully healthy.
It is Clark Kellogg with us, guys. Top 10 pick coming out of Ohio State. I mean, you played against Bobby Knight. I couldn't even imagine Coach Knight in this era, you know, with
yeah,
NIL
yeah.
and the portal. Do you ever see the toothpaste going back in the tube, or is this where we're just going to be living?
No, we're going to be living here. I mean, we're going to have to continue just to navigate it and pivot and get guardrails around it. But it's here to stay, and it's for good reason by and large. I mean, it's long overdue. Should have happened a while ago. Anytime there's major change and disruption. It's uncomfortable and a little wild and chaotic, but I think we're moving in the right direction. It's just going to take a little while. It certainly has allowed teams across the country. I think we've probably got more really good teams
right.
in college basketball because of NIL, the transfer portal, and the COVID additional year. I just think there are more really good teams seeded outside of the top four seed lines, which should make for extremely competitive and compelling basketball between the lines.
You know, not to put words in your mouth, but there's some coaches that are just tremendous recruiters, but sometimes they just struggle with the X's and O's. You know, you think about, I'll say some names, Calipari comes to mind, sometimes Bruce Pearl. I mean, is this where you lean on your assistants, or are you just, because some of these teams have got guys, their average age is like 24 right now in some of these teams.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting when you talk about the makeup of a staff and what coaches are really good at and which ones do great jobs. There's so many ways to evaluate coaches, and you kind of simplified it, X's and O's recruiting, but the staff is critically important. I just don't think we can underestimate the value of the right staff, the right fit, philosophically, experience-wise. And I think the coaches you mentioned have done, I mean, Calipari is remarkable to me in what he was able to do at Kentucky. I think he may have been the only coach that could have done what he did at Kentucky. I know some folks talk about them falling short of national championships based on the place where those guys were drafted, but it's a really difficult thing to have that kind of talent and then to get it to play hard and together, which he did consistently. You know, winning the tournament isn't just about talent. It's a bit of a crucible, but I don't know of many coaches that would have been able to do the job that he did, turning his roster over as much as he did in the early portions of the one and done era. I think Bruce Pearl, I mean, he's been a winner everywhere he's been at every level of coaching, and I think it's one of the remarkable jobs that he's done at Auburn. I think he's a fantastic coach and has done a great job and should. He's certainly going to be on the list for Coach of the Year awards this year, deservedly so. So it's a matter of how you evaluate it, but there are a lot of guys out there doing great work in a tough spot.
Do you foresee the run that the SEC went on this season being sustainable, or was this an anomaly?
I think it's sustainable. I mean, when you have really good coaches and you get good players, I think that can continue to build on itself. What it means in the tournament is something different than what it looks like during the regular season. But clearly, I think it's sustainable as a conference. I mean, the resources are there. The schools have a lot of appeal to them, both academically and location-wise and athletically. I don't foresee the SEC going away. I think they're going to be top shelf as a league for the foreseeable future when it comes to all sports, but certainly basketball is what we're thinking about now. But, yeah, I think it's sustainable, no doubt.
And, of course, last night we saw some great moments, Alabama State coming out of Montgomery.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
was great to see. And then, like, I guess we should have seen this coming, is that, North Carolina heard all the rumbling, Clark, and they made a statement. But can they do anything moving forward, though?
I think they can. I mean, this is a dangerous team. They're believing. They're getting better. I was not of the opinion that they deserve to be in, but I always trust the committee. At the end of the day, I know the work and the care they put into the work and how hard it is to evaluate teams. And there is a subjectivity to selecting the teams, particularly when you get down to the last several, and all are flawed, all have warts, and you're trying to determine which one or two or three are the best and most deserving to be in the field. That's major difficult work. So I always defer. Ultimately, I can disagree with the committee, and I did as it related to North Carolina, but I also can respect where they land. And then at the end of the day, it becomes a matter of how you perform, because that's what Carolina can control. That's what the players can control. And that, to me, is what's the beauty of sports. All of the noise is the noise, the commentary, the debate, the disagreement, the consensus. But when it gets between that 94-by-50-foot box, your seed number doesn't mean anything. Color of your uniform doesn't mean anything. Can you hoop, and do you hoop well enough to beat your opponent? And that's what it comes down to.
All right, before we let you go, we get one every year, sometimes even a couple. Who's the upset that you like in this year's bracket?
There are a couple of teams I really like. I do love Yale. I think they're a very talented team that can rebound with Texas A&M. The Drake Bulldogs, their style and system and point guard are really a great combination to slow down a really good Missouri team. I really love the way Liberty plays. I just don't know if they'll have enough against Oregon. So those are three double-digit seed teams that I really, really like a lot.
Well, Clark, we always appreciate your insight, man. And again, we'll all be watching. And you tell those guys what's what this week.
We'll have a good time. We always have good fun when those guys hang out with us for 3 weeks. It's a real joy to be part of the family that covers college basketball this time of year.
Right on, man. Thanks again, Clark Collin from CBS. Thanks, Clark. You can follow him on Twitter as
well. Take care, guys. Enjoy the madness.
You got it, big guy. Coming up next, Chris, as we said, he's been a busy little beaver today booking all these guests. We're going to switch back to some NFL, talk about what the Falcons are going to do. They've made some more moves. Where's all this money come from? They find it. Carl says it every year, man. Don't get all strung out on the cap. They always find a way. But we'll talk to Greg Allman. He writes for Fox Sports. See what he thinks about anybody. Bueller, anybody giving us a third-round pick for Kirk Cousins next? Hey, man, it is Dukes and Bell, and hope you're having a good day. We're having a fun day. Chris has got, like, lots of great content. We got content up the yin-yang today, man. A lot of great guests. Always great catching up with Clark Kellogg. A couple guys hit me up on Twitter getting a kick out of the analogy that he is, like, the smart kid in school dealing with, like, the miscreants whenever TBS and CBS get together for the tournament with Charles and Kenny getting into it with him.
It's funny because he's the smart kid, but he could also beat you up.
Right. I mean, like, people realize, he was a top 10 pick. Yeah. I want to say he was an NBA All-Rookie. He played for the Pacers back in the day, but that's Clark Kellogg. And if you missed it, you can hit the Odyssey Rewind zoop on the app and check out the conversation. Right now, we'll switch over to the Oblong Spheroid, man. Talks of football with our man Greg Allman, as we say, the Midnight Rider. And he's always great from Fox and covers our division, covers the NFL. And we'll start off, Greg, with, I don't know, Josina Anderson heard that people are talking to us, but would anybody actually give us a third-round pick and then take on a hit for that cap hit for Kirk Cousins?
Yeah, I think if they were to get a third-rounder for Kirk, Atlanta's eating a really big chunk of that $37 million. Because right. It's one thing to trade for a guy who's making $37 million. If Atlanta says, all right, we'll turn $25 million into a bonus, how do you like this $12 million Kirk Cousins? That might get you three. I'm still not sure it does.
So basically, but, buying a third-round pick.
Yeah. You're offloading a lot of salary. It's kind of like if you didn't like the idea of having a $37 million backup, as some teams might, this mitigates that. This says, okay, look, you're going to take a decent chunk of it off the board, but here's some money you can spend on another position that might help you this year. And that's what it does. And again, if you get a draft pick out of it, that's even better. I'd be impressed if they can get a three.
He was injured last year, but we picked him up today. Jordan Fuller, the safety, presumably going to start, Greg, alongside Jesse Bates. Do you like the move?
Yeah, I think they've done a good job. I mean, obviously they haven't had a lot to work with money-wise, but to think about Leonard Floyd up front, to think about Divine Diablo in the middle, to think about Jordan Fuller, adding not the veteran guys, but not necessarily in their last year veteran guys. So I think there's a value in that. I think, I don't mind it at all. It's one of those where obviously they need to change some things, and they've lost some key pieces as well on this defense, but I think it works out well for them.
We pick up Leonard Floyd. Now, he's getting long in the tooth, but he's always been a solid piece. We move on because of the salary situation with Grady. And I always said, look, if you're one of the players on a really bad defense, I don't think you can say that he's inexpendable, or there's no way you could move on. You couldn't move on. We had a hard time with our audience because Grady's been such a stalwart. But let's be honest, I mean, we're all penciled in here in this world. But what about our defense? Can they fix this defense? Do you like the moves? Will they be any better? And do we have to go edge rush with that first pick?
I would definitely go edge rush if I were them, honestly. I mean, this is something where I've been kind of pounding the table on since last year when I thought they'd take one at eight. They really haven't addressed him. And Leonard Floyd, don't get me wrong, Leonard Floyd's a big step in the right direction. He can be a 10-sack guy. He's not that far removed. I think he's had at least eight sacks each the last 3 years. But you need to really infuse the position with some talent, and it takes a first-round pick to do that. I think there are good edges that will be there at 15. It might be the third edge in this class. It might be the fourth edge in this class. But I think that's what they have to do. It's kind of like if you get pressure up front, it makes everything behind you better. And they haven't had that, and I think it's been a big part of why they haven't had a good defense. So, I do think they can be an improved defense to change out coordinators, to change out, maybe a third of the personnel right now. It needed to change, and it's something where, again, I don't know if it's solved yet, but it seems like it's a step in the right direction.
We know you covered Tampa for a long time, Greg. They've made some good moves this offseason. Looks like it's going to be another battle between the Falcons and the Bucs in the NFC South. How do you break down what they've done so far?
Yeah, I mean, Tampa's MO the last couple of years has just been keeping their own. So I thought they did well. I mean, Chris Godwin and Alonte David are Grady Jarrett types, are guys that have been here a long time. You know, like you said, stalwart. And it was really a priority for them to keep them. I thought they did pretty well to get Godwin where they got him. Some of the other receivers, you know, you see some of the money they've gotten, maybe slightly younger guys, have been really big checks. So I thought they did well there. They brought back their guard, Ben Bredesen. Not a ton of additions in terms of big dollar additions. They were able to add Hassan Reddick, a lot like Atlanta. I mean, all four teams in this division could use some edge help. So to see Hassan Reddick, to see Leonard Floyd, kind of on similar type deals in terms of the money and the stage of their careers, that's not surprising me at all. But yeah, I think Tampa did what they wanted in terms of just keeping their core together. I think they feel confident that that's something that's worked for them and been a big part of the kind of the sustained success they've had here these last 4 or 5 years.
Greg Allman, guys from Fox with us here on the WaitForIt.com hotline, kind of bouncing around the league. Let's get your 2 cents worth. Do you buy the Shedeur Sanders nonsense? Do the Giants take him? Where is he going to wind up? Is he going to be top five, top 10?
Yeah, I don't know. It's all over the map in that it's one of those where you have teams at the top that need quarterbacks and haven't necessarily done anything. You look at Titans, you look at Browns, you look at Giants, 1, 2, 3. None of them have really taken action to where you'd say, oh, well, now they don't have to go quarterback. So everyone wants to talk about the Giants and Shedeur. I don't know that he will be there at three is the problem, and that there's still a world where if you think Cleveland wants to invest in a quarterback, and, I mean, if you're a team that's hamstrung by a terrible contract like that Deshaun Watson contract, it kind of helps if you can get your quarterback cheap for 4 years, which is what a draft pick does. So, I don't know. It's one of those where, you know, I also am aware that they don't necessarily have to be two quarterbacks worth taking in the top five every year. I think we got spoiled a little bit last year to have, I mean, five different quarterbacks all making an impact as rookies, whatever it was, six drafted in the top 12. And we're not that far removed from that Kenny Pickett class where there was only one first rounder and he barely went in the first round and wasn't very good. So I think sometimes there's a pressure, all of these teams that don't have a quarterback, there's this, it's almost like a vacuum where you feel the need to elevate whatever quarterbacks are there to franchise quarterback status. And I think we've kind of done that a little bit with Cam Ward, and he's probably the number one pick Tennessee. I don't know that Shedeur Sanders is right there at that next stat. So, he could be just because the teams that are at the top of the draft need quarterbacks. You know, we still could see, again, Kirk Cousins could fill one of those holes. If you had a team that could get him for less than he's costing the Falcons and wants to add a veteran,
right,
that's not necessarily a long-term answer. But if you don't like the short-term answers this year, that might work for them. So I'm still unsure how things fit in. I mean, you got another whole subplot is Jackson Dart slipping into the first round.
Right.
Or Jalen Milroe slipping into the first round. I'm not sold on those guys either. I don't think this is a great quarterback class. Sometimes if you need a quarterback, you're going to take what's left on the shelf.
Good move or bad move for the Vikings to turn the keys over to McCarthy?
A bold move is what I would say. I think there's definitely less drama than if you brought Aaron Rodgers there. But I think the Vikings have done such a great job to take a 13-win team and make them better on both lines of scrimmage here. But again, there's just uncertainty. I mean, it's a little bit like Atlanta. I mean, at least with Atlanta, you had 3 games to get a sense of what you have from your young quarterback there. But, you know, for Minnesota, no matter how much confidence you have in J.J. McCarthy and how much you like the way he held himself, he's still never played a snap of real NFL football. So the idea that he could take a playoff-ready team, again, we probably would have said the same thing about Sam Darnold a year ago, but it's a big risk. You worry that 4 weeks into the season, they'll be 2-2, they'll have limitations at quarterback, and they'll be forced into making a more desperation move to bring in a veteran. But it's the bold move, and if you listen to Kevin O'Connell, he certainly trusts a young quarterback and trusts his ability and his history to produce good results and good progress from young quarterbacks.
Talking about the NFL, man, with Greg Allman. The Aaron Rodgers thing. So is he just going to step away, or is he going to take this all the way to, I don't know, the draft? Or when does it? When I'm asking you to read the mind of Aaron Rodgers. But do you think the Giants are viable? I mean, I know Minnesota, as you said, you know, they took their hat back out of the ring. Where does he go?
Yeah, I don't know right now. I mean, the Vikings made sense, and that if you can put him at the head of a playoff-ready team, I mean, he's in real danger of kind of ending his legacy on a real downturn and having 2 years that are just unremarkable. And you hate to see that. That's, I mean, Favre at least made the playoffs at the end, you know? I mean, it's one of those where the idea of him, you know, right now, what we see right now is what feels like indifference. Like, you know, I'm not in a real hurry to pick. And it's like, well, the rest of the league is kind of in the process of trying to do that. So the longer you wait, the more you have the best options you have just by the fact that they can't wait, picking somebody else. And if you sign a, you know, right now it's a Russell Wilson, or you're signing a Jameis Winston or a Joe Flacco. I don't know that precludes you from signing an Aaron Rodgers later, but I think just in terms of what you're telling the guy you're signing right now, that's kind of rude. So no, it could be he steps away. And again, it's like you said, it's not really an easy mind to predict. Guy had 28 touchdowns last year. So, I mean, it wasn't a great year by any means, but right. I think there are a lot of NFL teams that would take 28 touchdowns and 11 interceptions if they felt like they didn't have the drama that comes with it. I'm intrigued. I don't know where he fits in. There's about three or four decent quarterback dominoes left. You could see somebody like Kirk Cousins get in the way, and he probably, even injured last year, was probably better than most of the options that are out there right now. So you'll have the draft. Maybe it takes the draft and these teams deciding they've exhausted their options before they make a move to trade for somebody or to sign a veteran. But it's kind of a slow waiting game going on right now for some of these teams.
Speaking of the Jets, can Justin Fields pull the reverse Geno Smith and Sam Darnold and go to the Jets to become a franchise quarterback?
Right. That seems like the uphill climb, the upstream swim of the choices there. No, it's intriguing to see. You have a new coach. I really like Aaron Glenn. I think their defense will be much improved. You know, Justin Fields, I feel like I don't know that he necessarily got a full chance to be everything or show everything he could in Pittsburgh last year. But no, I'm intrigued. I mean, 2 years, $40 million, that's definitely a commitment where he's going to get a long leash and a long chance to prove himself. And if he doesn't, I mean, this is team three for him, to where, you know, you're starting to run out of opportunities where teams are going to hand you the keys. So I'm really intrigued to see what he does. I think he has to find that balance of run and pass. You know, maybe ran a little bit too much in Chicago, maybe didn't run enough in Pittsburgh. But again, there's so many models for mobile quarterbacks with a strong defense being a combination for success. And New York, you just want to kind of get on the uptick. I mean, it's just been so long they've had negative storylines there that, you know, I want to think that Aaron Glenn is a smart hire and a guy that can take them in the right direction.
All right, big guy. Greg, we always appreciate the insight. Greg, if you missed it earlier, basically saying hard to see a straight third-round pick and somebody taking all that salary. Basically, they're going to have to eat some. So a prorated deal for somebody for Kirk Cousins in a nutshell.
Yes, I really think that's the case. And it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, if you're a team that has cap space left and hasn't used it, there's not a ton of $10 million a year signings you can make right now to make good use of that space. So if you're a team without a quarterback, you've decided that it's not Rodgers, it's not Wilson, it's not these other, retreads, it's worth kicking the tires on. And I think, obviously Kirk has to be on board for it right now. It's that complicated thing. But I think given where he is, if he has a decent team that wants him and believes in him and will give him the team for a year, maybe promise not to draft somebody after they add him, I think that would work.
Hey, man, great stuff, Greg. Appreciate the time. Follow him on Twitter as well. Thanks again.
Okay, guys, take care.
You got it. It is a Dukes and Bell. This hour of the show is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. So, yeah, I mean, there are some options, if you missed it earlier, Josina Anderson, and we'll talk about what she had to say earlier on social media about maybe somebody, you know, at least conversations about a third. A conversation, you know, that's possible. I like what D-Led said. Anybody, if he can pull this off, he's going to Hall of Fame as a general manager. Talking about Terry Fontenot. When we come back, would you give up, I mean, the ultimate personal achievement. If you were an actor, would you give up an Oscar for your favorite team to win a championship? Would you give, I mean, you grew up a long-suffering Jets fan. Would you give up, I don't know, a Marconi to see the Jets get a Super Bowl?
At this rate, I just might.
I hear you. Hey, man, we'll tell you what actor said that. Also coming up, if you missed it, we had a great story earlier today about arguably the most perfect menu you will ever see. And this is from Scotty Scheffler. Stay tuned. You're darn right it is. What a play is play. Yesterday, we played up in the other side of Tennessee state line, man. Great times. We mentioned it earlier to start the show, as Carl brought up throughout the show yesterday. Thanks, everybody. And there was a lot of everybody's to show up and join us at Twin Peaks up there in East Ridge, Tennessee, just south of a 2475 split. Thanks to James, the owner. He owns the Twin Peaks. It will be at on Friday in Buckhead. I think if we can make it work, Steak may try to swing by and sit in for a little bit with us, unless he's got, like, you know, responsibilities with the kids and all this, you know.
Or like a pickleball tournament or
who
something.
Knows? But anyway, it would be kind of fun. So stay tuned for that. But we'll be over in Buckhead store as we get ready for the second day of the tournament. But again, yesterday it was great. We just weren't knowing. I mean, we were up there with New Realm Brewing. We love to promote New Realm. We're good buddies with those guys. Love the brew. I always love being on the Beltline store. But we were not sure how many guys were going to show up. And then yesterday we literally had like all these folks from towns like Tryon and Ringgold, Georgia. A lot of guys, a couple of guys from Dalton. It was great. So if you're in the northern environs, as we say, always use the app, because I know sometimes up in the mountains it gets a little funky. But it is so cool to be this far from the city as we were yesterday and have the audience up there, which was just great.
Or maybe just syndicate Dukes and Bell.
Well, yes, that would be a great idea. Yes, Chris. Yes, it would. And then do the show from Naples. And wouldn't that be exciting? Hey, man, by the way, coming home yesterday, we were joking around because we met this this gentleman who's the mayor of the city of Tryon, which is on the way to the Cloudland, unbelievable golf course, Macklemore. We remember we did the show up there last summer, and that's where I got my last speeding ticket. Knock wood. Georgia State Patrol got me on a little two-lane road, and I was going too fast, and he zipped around. I told the story yesterday about the state trooper saying, well, at least you didn't make me chase you. Well, I wasn't really planning on doing that.
You probably wouldn't be here today if you did.
Right.
So.
Pulled right over. Yeah, I mean, unless you want to make, you know, one of those videos on YouTube. No, yesterday, but real quick, as I was driving home on 75, and not a trip that I make as often as the other parts of 75 and 85. So, you know, you're following Waze. You know, I don't have the radar detector anymore. I just rely on Waze. And that means you got to rely on people in front of you for reporting if they see, you know, police and this and that. But one thing that drives me crazy, there was a guy in the left lane, just holding up traffic, totally oblivious. You know, if it's 70, you know, they're going to give you a 10. You can go 80 in a 70. Now, if you want to go 82, some guys, they're a little skittish on that. Me, well, you know me, Mr. Vegas, I'll push my luck. But this guy, when I finally get up to this dude, and he's in a Tesla. Now, again, are you saving battery? And I'm staying in my lane. We're not talking about the political ramifications of people throwing Molotov cocktails on Teslas.
No.
But there is a correlation between people that drive electric cars and they drive slow. Now, I know there's some guys, I've seen them on 85, who also drive Teslas and drive fast, but they are the exception to the rule in my personal experience driving, you know, some 60 miles every day to and from.
So you are essentially saying that people who drive Teslas,
people who care about the environment, drive like weenies.
they drive with a more of a guarded style,
yes.
Would you say?
Now, say this. Now, great that you're going the speed limit, but are you aware of the mile and a half of traffic you've created? Because invariably, there'll be someone in the middle lane who does drive scared, who's going slower, and now you've created what my father used to say when we'd road trip, the parade lap. For those not familiar with the Indy 500, three cars all going the same speed, which now no one can get by. So when I finally get by this guy, you know, and I pass him, then he decides to hit the gas. I'm like, see, that's even worse. Just go the same freaking speed.
Yeah.
Now, did I zip by? No, I finally got through and I was able to get past this guy. And then he starts, and he zips. Now he's flying by me because he's in a Tesla. They, you know, hypothetically, they can outperform at least, you know, straight line, any of the V10s or V8s or whatever you got, because cars generate so much torque and they just get off the line. They can really go. We all know that. We've seen the videos. So then I'm like, okay, so now what? So all right, then if you're going to be the rabbit. Then hit it. Then he slows back down. So I'm like, what are you? Finally, I'm looking at this guy. And again, anger management techniques. And I couldn't help myself. I literally do like, I put the two hands up in the Italian. How would you describe this? You know, with the two fingers.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Like the money, like the give me your money.
Or are you familiar? So I pass him. I literally, I'm not flipping, but I'm literally two hands off the wheel. What are you doing? You nerd.
Did he have his phone in his hand?
No, he's just like, part two. Now I come up on a guy in a murder van, white panel truck. Same thing. Guy's going slow in the left lane, little bit of weaving. So I don't know if, you know, if happy hour started early.
Oh, boy.
So then, same thing. I'm able to pass this guy. There was a Mercedes. Me and this guy in an AMG, we're kind of taking turns back and forth, leading the way. We get past this guy. Then this jackleg, now he steps on it. So now I'm like, what? And I see Waze. I see there's a cop. So I get off it. I look at the AMG, sees the same thing. We slow down. This jackleg in the white panel truck, the murder van, keeps going. And sure enough, whoop, Cartersville cop got him. Pulls right over. Takes him down.
And justice was rightfully served.
No, I'm just, Oren, all I'm saying is, as it's an extended version in the guy talking what grinds Mike's gears. If you're going to be in the left lane, there is a responsibility. You've got to set. You are the rabbit. You are the person setting the pace. Okay, and if you don't know that, you shouldn't be in the left lane. Thank you.
You're right.
Some of these people don't know this.
No, you're right.
You know, you got an entire generation of people who don't know the rules of the road.
Yeah, my generation sometimes not great, Mike. I'll admit.
Or
to you
too
that.
Much on point here. You're looking at me.
No, you're exactly right. I can't stand it when like just. Be one or the other. Be slow or be fast.
Just be consistent.
Just don't go back and forth.
Thank you. That's all we're trying to say. Earlier today, Oren had a great story about the Troy basketball coach revealing a strange Waffle House rule. For guys who missed the conversation, just real quick, give me the story about Scott Cross. He was basically saying that he has a sort of a litmus test for recruits.
Yeah, when he takes recruits to town, he said he took a couple kids in. And they drove by a Waffle House. He was like, hey, you guys going to go to Waffle House for breakfast? And they were like, what's Waffle House? Needless to say, those guys did not get signed. Another guy he was recruiting drove by the Waffle House. He was like, hey, can we go to Waffle House for breakfast tomorrow? Said it was one of his best players ever. So that's his litmus test. If you like Waffle House, yay. You don't. Go somewhere else.
Tough question this morning on the Steakhouse. Sandra and Steak posited the question that are you a Waffle House or Chick-fil-A? Man, that's tough. We said this earlier.
Yeah.
Wish Chick-fil-A was open on Sunday. We understand the Kathy family and why they aren't. You know, but still, gotta have your Waffle House. It's too great. You know, two Southern traditions. The reason I bring up Chick-fil-A, a couple of guys hit us up on the text line. A couple of guys on Twitter. And it's a great point. Do you remember, Chris, you might be too young for this, back in 2012, there was a four-star recruit and a great name, Casanova McKenzie.
No.
And he was recruited by a number of schools in the Southeast, and he takes Auburn over Clemson because they want no Chick-fil-A on the Clemson campus.
Oh, okay.
Which I thought was great. You had to go like 15 minutes off campus to get to a real restaurant, he said in an interview. There was no Chick-fil-A on campus. So that was ultimately why he decided to go to Jordan-Hare over Death Valley, which I thought was kind of fun.
Well, you know what I heard, Mike Bell and Oren? I heard that Coach Key drives his recruits past the Cheetah to see what their response is. And if they don't cooperate, they're not coming to the Flats.
You're a big fan of the Spring Street Ballet,
yeah,
son.
Exactly.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know if, by the way, for the record, I'm never, not that I ever did ever with Brent Key, but there are other members no longer on the staff and players that, yes, we are familiar with that establishment, not to name names.
What a fun week that's going to be there, just as a heads up for all.
Yeah. Now, for years, the old station, we used to do this great event. They still have a great time at the Cheetah. They do March Madness and all that, but it's a blast. It's a good time. But yeah, there was Carl and I, he missed out on it, hosted about 12 years of basically afternoons. When I worked with Pollock, remember we had the Cone of Purity?
Yes.
We had him in the VIP area, so we didn't have
to. Or even better, the 1 year I was there with him, he stayed in studio and had his wife and kid with him.
Yes, Davidson, I'm in this den of iniquity, and Pollock is back at the ranch. By the way, his wife is recuperating from the brain cancer surgery. If you didn't hear the story on Dave's social media, follow David Pollock and nothing but thoughts and prayers, but that's a great poll. That is
true. You and Bo would be, you and Squid Billy would be at the Cheetah, and I'd be there with Pollock in the sort of the sanctity house, if you will.
Oh, it would be on stage. Remember, guys, it bills his alluvia on your credit card. Let's go. And we, true story on that. We used to do... basically the only place, the joke was, until of course Towson beat Virginia, it was the only place that a one seed would lose to a 16 seed. We would basically have the girls would compete based wearing the like a sash of the other.
It'd be a bucket next to them.
And they passed the bucket, and there was a time, you know, you always have the obligatory, not obligatory, but you know what I mean, that middle-aged or older guy at the end of the bar who just pours money to a certain lady. The girl that was Miss Kentucky made $17,000.
That one weekend, because Kentucky was here that weekend.
Wow.
They were playing in the regional in Atlanta that weekend.
She made $17,000.
You had all these tips. Kentucky fans just like emptying out bank accounts for this lady.
I kid you not.
Well, I was going to ask if Squid had a hard time, because when all the dancers would wear the high heels, they'd be much
taller. Now, see,
much
that's Chris. Chris is saying that. And see, that's, you know, that's, I'm nowhere near this, Bo. Hey, that's on. See, they'll get back to him. They'll blame me. Chris said that, not me. Hey, man. A couple of guys. By the way, if you missed the story, we talked about this earlier. We will talk about it coming up in about less than an hour. But the Braves do bring back Craig Kimbrel.
Yes,
and a lot of guys hitting us up. Some folks are excited. Most of our fans on the text line are Braves fans that are listening are saying, "Eh, what's he got left?" As Bo Johnson was raving about it today on the Andy Randy show. He was just not good in Baltimore this last year.
I've only heard Bo be that passionate about, I think, LSU and his daughter's softball team. He was fired up about the Braves bringing back Craig Kimbrel, and he wanted no part of it. Listen, Mike, I mean, the bottom line is he was not good last year. He had a 5.5 ERA, under 500 record, and a negative WAR.
Right. Yeah, he's going to be a setup guy, situational setup guy, but the deal is it's only $2 million, so it's dirt cheap. Hey, guys, if you missed it, we spoke about it earlier in the show. I'll get into it at 5 o'clock because the Masters menu is out for Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah.
I've got the menu is up. The Masters have tweeted it. I've got it at Mike Bell ATL. We don't say X, but you can check it out. But we'll dive into it later in the show. Some would say it is gastronomic perfection. This hour of the show, guys, brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. There's your guy talk. Tomorrow, Hooters, guys, Cumberland. Chris and I kicking off the tournament, Georgia-Gonzaga. That'll be at 4:30. We'll be there from 2 to 7. So join us at the Cumberland location of Hooters, and we'll have some good time, fun time with Dukes and Bell. Come back. Falcon Report, they sign a safety. Does this change the draft strategy? We'll dive into all that. But the Falcons finding some money. Can they get anyone to take Kirk Cousins off our hands? We'll continue that talk.